So I'll start over again. So thank you, Ejaz, and all the organizers for this fantastic conference. My brain, I think, has gained 5 pounds from all the things I have learned. I feel really, really wise. So thank you very much. So let's thank him now. Okay, and this is an international conference. And so how many countries are represented? I just went through it in my mind, and I came up with 5. Anybody has more than 5? Let me know. So my talk today is about something that I've been trying to learn. I spent some time in Boston and talking to people who were doing genomics. And these were not statisticians. They were, what is it called, medical genomics, evolutionary genomics, anything genomics except statistics was there. And this slide has my collaborators, Cam, Sui, and Fan Yang. And of course, Fan is the one who's doing all the work. So this is similar to the talk yesterday morning. It's about studies of association between disease and genetic markers. And so there are so many procedures out there. So what we're doing is we're thinking about how to compare procedures and then sort of having the geneticists compete with the statisticians and see who comes up with the best or who has the best. So that's what we're trying to do. And so it's the large P, small n problem. So of course that's what this conference is about. And the people I talked to, they had 3,000 sample size 3,000. Half of those were cases, diabetes, and the other ones were non-cases, controls they call them. And they didn't have any trouble, even though they had 500,000 genetic markers. So P is 500,000. So why is not a problem? Well, it's because they did things backwards, dual. So when they talk about averages, they average over the genetic markers. So they have an average of 500,000, which looks very stable to them. Why should we worry? So that's what they were doing. And then they end up with, this is like yesterday, they end up with 500,000 p-values. She actually showed us a slide yesterday of the p-values. And then they look at the ones that are beyond the Bonferroni bounds. So it's 0.05 divided by 10 to the 7th. And that's what they used. And also they have models, and they're different from our models. So I'm going to give one of their models. And what are good procedures? So yesterday morning, Lynn was talking about actually the models that statisticians use. And those are also included. So this repeats what I just said. 1,500 cases, 1,500 controls, 3,000 people. How do they differ genetically? And so we have 500 markers that hopefully tell us how they differ in terms of genetics and disease. Okay, so they use the term SNP. They repeat that many, many times in their language all over. So what is a SNP? It's sort of the basic unit that I work with. So the human genome has 3 billion locations. And on each location there, you can have possible values. And on most of these locations, all the humans have exactly the same value, but the ones where they don't have the exact value, they call them SNPs. And you can have 0, 1, or 2. So everybody in this room has 0, 1, or 2 at a given location. And so what they're hoping is that perhaps those people with zero, those are the ones with disease, and the people that don't have zero, they're the healthy ones. That's what they were trying to, that's what they're trying to accomplish, find out exactly that kind of thing. So then they have association. So again, this is a repeat of what I said before, this kind of getting the ideas and notation into our heads. Values 0, 1, and 2, cases and controls. And then the question is association. So what they like is correlation, and correlation actually works very well. So you see what they correlate. Right there, touch this. This one? So we have this 0, 1, 3 scores, and then we have these disease indicators. So these are either 0 or 1, these are either 0, 1, or 2. So it's a very simple correlation problem, and it's what we used to call a two-sample problem. You have a sample of cases and a sample of controls, and nowadays they call it the two-group problem, cases and controls. So you just correlate markers with indicator of disease. And then you just have to test 500,000 of these. So there's your statistic, there's the Bancaroni. Okay, so now there are complications. So they're going to look at one SNP at a time. So remember, SNP, when I say SNP, I mean a score between 0 and 2. And but they realize that there are, since they have so many variables, they have to worry about confounding, spurious correlation, population structure, stratification. Those are the words they use. And so they have to take care of that, and they decided to take care of that using principal component analysis. Now, principal component analysis works best when you have, well, normal data. Of course, here is 0, 1, 2. And the other thing is that they want to do the correlation version of principal components, so that means they have to standardize, subtract a mean, and divide by a standard deviation. So that's their first step. So first they're going to standardize, then they're going to use principal components. So this is just subtracting the mean, estimate of the mean, and subtracting, dividing by an estimate of the standard deviation. So essentially, the model they use is binomial 2, and that's, they call it the Hardy-Weinberg model. And using that model, this is the way to standardize. So here, the way I'm doing the subscripts, I'm doing it the way they do it. So here, I stands for a SNP. So there's 500,000 I's. And then J is people. So here we're subtracting off average over people. J goes from 1 to N. So that's how they standardize. Okay, so we have approximately mean 0, approximately the same standard deviation. So we're going to go correlation version of principal component analysis. And so here, why are they doing the principal components? Well, they want to adjust for the stratification problem. And the stratification problem is the question that came up yesterday after Lynn's talk. And so here's the slide that goes along with that. So here we're looking at one SNP, and they're asking, is that related to disease? And this is STAT 101, Simpson's paradox. So in this cluster, there's no correlation. In this clusters, there is no correlation. But if you toss those clusters together, you ignore the fact that there are clusters, then you get this line, and it looks like you have correlation association when you don't. So they want to correct for that. So they're going to be subtracting off the principal component that they get from thinking about clustering. So, and what they're going to do, they're going to use genetic markers to adjust for clustering. So that's the question that came up yesterday. Well, how can you do that? Don't you lose information? Well, you do. So the answer is yes or no. So it's yes if the one, the SNP you're looking at is associated with the ones you're using to adjust for clustering. So you lose power. On the other hand, this is what they do, and so I'm just telling you what they do, and if there are better ways, then maybe somebody in this room can think of it. But this is actually what's being done all over. Okay, so the clusters are called the genetic ancestry strata, and then people with similar ancestry are in the same strata. Ancestry is the confounding variable, and you have to correct for it, and the way that you do it is to use dual principal component analysis. And there is an algorithm out there that's very popular. It has two names, EigenStrat or EigenSoft. So there's the design matrix. It's P by N, and in statistics, we would end up using this. This is the usual way we deal with the design matrix in statistics, and that's a P by P, and that would be 500,000 by 500,000. They can't handle it, the computer wouldn't accept it, so they said, well, we'll just do dual, and end up with using an N by N matrix. This matrix right here is what they work with. So that's N by N, that's 3,000 by 3,000, and that they can handle that. And when you look at that, it looks very good because, as I said before, it involves averages of over 500,000. I forgot to mention the very last line there. It says, it turns out it doesn't matter which way you do the principal components, dual or not. You end up in the same place. But I'm getting used to thinking of it the way they do it, because I'm thinking, oh, average of 500,000, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Why not? But does it work? Here is sort of some of the language they use. Ancestry, they have a precise definition of what's your ancestry. There it is. It's the jth coordinate of the kth eigenvector of the dual matrix. So there it is, the definition of your ancestry. Well, before I go on, maybe I should say that, you know, here I'm showing you clusters and strata, but in the end they're not going to be actually trying to find the strata or the clusters. They're just going to adjust for it without ever having to actually do any kind of cluster analysis. There's absolutely no cluster analysis. They just adjust sort of in the natural statistical way. So that's what I'm saying. There's no need to use clusters. Instead, use consensus. Continuous ancestry adjustments. And how would you do that? Well, you just regress on the principal components, and then you can predict what your y is, and then you subtract, and then you have residuals, and those residuals you have subtracted out the ancestry. Okay, so each person gets a predicted ancestry and SNP score. It's a predicted ancestry SNP score. You subtract that off from your actual SNP score, and you're taking care of stratification. That's the story. Okay, so but another interesting part is how many, you know, your principal components, how many eigenvectors are you going to include? So they get, where do they get their answer? So I thought they would never read the Annals of Statistics, but it turns out they read the Annals of Statistics, and that's where they found their answer to how many eigenvectors to include. Ian did it. Where is he? There. So he found that the largest eigenvector has this distribution that's called the Tracy-Whittam distribution. So they call it the Tracy-Whittam test, but of course it should be the Johnstone test, because he's the one who actually found this result. Okay, so this is, I guess, just showing what I said before. This is your definition of ancestry, and it's a dual case principal component, well, evaluated at the ith column. So it's just a regression coefficient when regressing on the eigenvector. So we don't really need to look into the details, but you get the best linear predictor of your ancestry based on the eigenvector. And that's what I talked about before. That's the residual. And you can ask yourself, you know, suppose I didn't do the dual, what would I get? I would end up in the same place. Okay, so this is how you adjust the biomarkers for ancestry, and then they also adjust the disease indicators so that these get adjusted the same way. And then you end up with the final statistic. So now you're looking at the correlation between the ancestry-adjusted genotypes and the ancestry-adjusted disease indicators. So it's a very straightforward, old-fashioned statistic. I think F.N. David is the one who proposed this as a good transformation of the correlation to get something that looks approximately T or approximately normal. So the Eigenstadt people didn't do this. We did this because, you know, we know from statistics that this is a good transformation. And, you know, it turned out to do well. Okay, so now what about their model? So I'm going to do this backwards. So we have these variables that are 0, 1, 2. So we're going to generate data so we can have a model for how disease and genomic variables are related. So the model they have is Hardy-Weinberg, that's binomial. And we're going to have a model that includes strata, and it also has to have an effect related to disease. So the key parameter here is relative risk of disease. RR, it's called, and that's actually what's the most important parameter in the, yesterday morning's talk, too, relative risk. And in this model, that comes in right there. So we have P star is the probability for a genetic score for cases. P is for controls. And so how do you get from cases to controls? Well, you put in that parameter right there. So this is how the controls and the cases are different. That's the key formula right there. And then strata 2, you do the same thing, except you have different P's. Okay, now then where do the P's come from? So as you go from SNP to SNP, you're going to have a different P. So how does that work? Well, so I'm going backwards now. This is how they get the P's. So they start out with a uniform variable, from 0.1 to 0.9. So these are what they call common variants. That means that this is a good choice for P. Then they get an output U, and then they choose P1 and P2 according to beta, like that. So hierarchical model, and the whole idea is that you get different P's as you go from one SNP to the next. So that's realistic. There's this constant V, genetic differentiation. So this data they were looking at were from Scandinavia, so they used they have found in Europe in general. So that's the model they use. So if you remember yesterday, the model was different. This was the key parameter yesterday, and then there was the logit is linear. The logit of this thing is linear. That was yesterday's, the logit of this was linear. Probability of the seeds, right? So this is a little different. Okay, so we're going to look at Monte Carlo, and we have 600 cases formed in controls from strata 1, similar for strata 2. Then we get the output, and then we can see how our methods are doing. Okay, so what are the methods? Method 1 is the one I've been talking about, Eigenstrat. Except we have we transformed the correlation, so we're doing a little better. And then we use Bonferroni. You see a typo right there. There should be a 0.05 in front. And Johnstone's test, and that's very simple. You compute the correlation. You get the p-value by referring it to the normal table, and if the p-value is small enough, then you found a marker that's related to the disease, and you publish papers. And as a matter of fact, they published a paper, and they got an award for the paper. So there's a happy ending to this story. So this is yesterday's model, logit of the probability of the seed. So that's the one I have here. Okay, so this is exactly the question that came up yesterday. So you can also standardize a phenotype. Okay, so method 2, logistic regression. What's the third method? Of course, EFRON. Who else? Oh, 3 minutes, 5 minutes? Okay. So that's the last method, and it was very frustrating reading this the first time, but then it got better. It was frustrating because he was doing something that looked very, very familiar. He was doing empirical Bayes, but he didn't have one single reference to empirical Bayes, not even to Ephraim Morris. So you think about what is the Bayes rule, and then you turn in that into a decision rule, and that will tell you what biomarker is associated with disease. And his starting point is the p-values. So forget about all that other stuff. He says, whatever they're doing, they're going to come up with a p-value. I'm going to look at the p-value. Never mind the biology. I'm going to look at the p-values. And then I have a hypothesis that there's no association. And then I have a density of the p-value under the hypothesis, and then I have this thing here, and this is a hard part. So this is an estimate. So we have prior probability. We make normal scores. You take C inverse of the p-value, get a normal, and then you look at the density of this Zi, and under the hypothesis you have this, in general you have this, and then you need an estimate here, and you estimate that on the empirical Bayes. So density denominator or Bayes rule is right there. And so they assume a mixture model, and they estimate that. So this is in Efron's book. He has a whole book on this now. It's all explained very well. Not only that, it also works very well. So this is just the details of how he estimates the unknowns. So it's all empirical. Everything gets estimated, and you end up with a rule that seems to work very well. Okay, and then of course, since he only uses the p-values, we can combine it with anything else. We can combine it with eigenstrat. We can combine it with logistic. And then more criteria. Oh, the criteria. Now, how do we compare these things? We start reading, and there are so many interesting ones. I just sort of picked out this interesting one. It's a hybrid Bayes Neumann Pearson. You subject to this, you maximize this using Bayes rule. So that was an interesting one. This one is the one that's working best for us. Neumann Pearson Spiritwall. I call this the gamma level. So you look at this quantity, probability of rejected when it's true, so that's false positives, and you call that the gamma level. So you sum from 1 to 500,000, and that's the gamma level. And then among these, you try to maximize this, which is sort of like power. So this is like type 1 error, this is like type 2 error, and you try to maximize that. So Spiritwall did this a long time ago, and it turns out the way he set it up is it's so general, it includes false discovery rates, and not only that, false negative discovery rates. Everything is included in his theorem. I'm going to just skip it because I'm out of time. But so 1972, look it up. There are no assumptions in his theorem whatsoever. It includes everything under the sun, what people have done ever since. It's part of what he did. So this was pointed out to me by Tony Kai, by the way. I'd forgotten. So somehow you looked it up. So then finally, the comparison. So, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, which one of these methods are working best. We have like several, right? Three big ones I mentioned, right? Now, which one is working best? Is it eigenstrat? Is it logistic? Is it Efron? Well, so it turns out to be very difficult because you want to calibrate the type 1 part, and that's not easy. So we've been working on this, and I just sort of give the most successful story here. We're trying to get Spiritwall gamma level 2.5. And so here, we're doing okay. This number 1, number 3, and number 4, this is very close to 2.5. I change R, this is the relative risk, I change R, and it's still okay. So there is our one success story. We have three methods where we have been able to fix the Spiritwall level, and then we can go to the next step, which is to look at the power, and let's see, who wins? Who's the winner? Well, this table, we have to look at more values here. But at this point, who's winning? This one, but I mean, it's just barely. And over here, they're really the same. So you can ignore these because we really didn't adjust properly here. So, but these power ones are the relevant ones. So then Eigen and Efron, log regression and Efron, they beat Eigen. So that's, I guess, it would be the good news. Thank you very much.